Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
You read my speech, and many people have done it, and I've seen it both in the papers and in the media, on television. It's been analyzed, and people thought that what I said was totally appropriate.
That's President Trump earlier today denying any responsibility in the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol last week. The president could be just a day away from a second impeachment or removal by the 25th Amendment. It is just one of several stories we're examining tonight at the Reporters Roundtable. My guests are Eva McCann, Washington correspondent for Spectrum News, and veteran journalist Bruce Johnson. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher, Twitter address HFisherWHUR. Bruce, Eva, thank you both for joining the program.
My pleasure, Harold.
Thanks for having us.
Eva, let me start with you. The latest news, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, out of Wyoming, third most powerful Republican in the House, saying she will vote to impeach President Trump. What are you hearing right now? Where are we in that process?
I'm not sure a lot of other Republicans will follow her, but she has been notable for her opposition to President Trump on some key policy positions and also his tone and rhetoric over the years. So maybe this isn't a big surprise, but she is arguably the most powerful Republican woman in Washington, so it's still noteworthy. Her basic belief, she says, is that President Trump summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of the attack. So she holds him responsible. But, you know, I'm speaking to rank-and-file Republicans here on Capitol Hill right now. I'm in the Capitol, and I just spoke to a Republican that represents Bowling Green, Kentucky, and he told me he is not going to support the resolution this evening to push Vice President Pence to move forward with the 25th Amendment or impeachment tomorrow. So I'm not sure that a lot of rank-and-file Republicans will follow Cheney.
Bruce, you've been around this town a long time, and you've had an opportunity to see, you know, quite a bit. Are you surprised at what we are still seeing from President Trump, even at this late date? And what are your thoughts about what we've been seeing, not only over the past 24 hours, but over the past week?
Learned a long time ago, Harold, not to be surprised by President Trump. And I think that's a big part of who he is and what he's been. I think a lot of the people that voted for President Trump, you know, over the last several years have been, you know, surprised by him. Just a couple of things. Here's what I think the story is going to be tomorrow. And I've been trying to keep up with things up until, you know, you brought us on just a couple of minutes ago. Liz Cheney and maybe four other Republicans, as we speak, you know, have come out and said they're going to vote for impeachment because, you know, Pence isn't going to do anything with the 25th Amendment. Forget that. Democrats have already impeached the president before. So you know they've got the votes to impeach him, and they'll move to do that come tomorrow. I think the story tomorrow is going to be how many Republicans join Democrats in voting for impeachment. And I don't think it has to be a big number. I think if you get 20 or north of 20 Republicans crossing over to support Democrats in impeaching Trump, I think that's a big deal, and it may be a number even bigger than 20. Also, what's going on tonight is that it's coming out in reports that Mitch McConnell is just furious with Trump. Surprise, and that he's not all that upset that the president is where he is right now. And McConnell and others in the leadership of the party might be seeing this as a way of getting rid of Donald Trump. And keep in mind, if the Senate goes along with the House and they vote to convict in the trial that they hold for Donald Trump, the guy doesn't get to run for office again. So they get rid of Donald Trump. And the biggest threat that he's got holding over these people, that he'll come back in 4 years and run for the presidency again. So it's really going to be interesting. And I think we're going to know sooner rather than later the fate of Donald Trump.
Do you think that it matters? Let's say your prediction is correct that some 10, 15, 20 Republicans decide to impeach, to vote for impeachment, do you think that it matters who they are, or is it just about the numbers?
No, it always matters who they are. It's like Liz Cheney. You know, of course, she's always been, you know, her own woman when it comes to Donald Trump. But keep in mind, Liz Cheney won 70% of the vote in Wyoming, of the Republican vote. Donald Trump won 70% of the vote in Wyoming. So she is voting on principles, doing the right thing, and I think you could get a couple of other Republican, you know, House members to come over. I don't think you're going to get the leadership to come over. I think it's already baked there. They are already in the Trump, you know, camp, and they're not going to move. They're just hoping somebody else would do the heavy work for them. The Senate, entirely different, entirely different. If they sense that Donald Trump is wounded and they're really of that voice, that they'd like to be rid of this guy and no longer be afraid of him, because that's how most of them have moved lockstep with him, because they're afraid of his constituency and his voters. I could see this thing cascading. I wouldn't bet on it at this point, but we still got time. That trial doesn't necessarily have to happen immediately.
One of the things that we've seen over the past 24 hours is this reporting by the Washington Post that said that some 5 hours passed before the president decided to shoot the video telling the rioters, these insurgents who happened to support him, to go home. If not surprising because of who the president is now, certainly that has to be one of the most disturbing things that we've seen in recent American history, particularly since we lost five people, a U.S. Capitol Police officer, one of them.
Is that for me?
Yes, sir.
My thing, the president behaved this way. It's like a building is on fire, that being the U.S. Capitol. People inside the building are calling you, telling you the building's on fire, send help, and you do nothing. In effect, that's what the president did. The police chief, Capitol Hill Police, he says that he was notified or that he called for help, and the White House, Justice Department, nobody sent reinforcements when he asked for them. I mean, these guys were in charge. They were controlling the U.S. Capitol for at least 2 hours. Lives were at stake. And think about it, not just regular senators, not just regular members of Congress. We're talking about the leadership. We're talking about the line of succession for the presidency. Pence was there. Pelosi was there. The leadership of both parties were there. You were talking about doing some serious damage. What if the guys who were armed used those weapons or had gotten their hands on those leaders? What if they had been terrorists and they got their hands on those leaders? I mean, we'd be having an entirely different conversation tonight. It would be even worse. And a lot of us couldn't imagine that it would get this bad.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the past week. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Eva, I want to ask you, just kind of give me a sense of, in the wake of the deaths, the destruction, the chaos that we saw last week, kind of paint a picture of why this remains such a partisan event, particularly when, you know, years ago, most of the Republicans really kind of fell in line during the course of the Watergate scandal. But this, in one sense or another, could be considered so much worse.
It could be. And I think that's why we're seeing the impeachment process move so quickly. You know, the last time President Trump was impeached, it took months. There were hearings. There was an investigation. This is all happening in a matter of days. And so that's the big difference here. But it's still largely going to be a partisan process because, you know, the Republican members of Congress, to some extent, feel as though they have to reflect the positions of the people that they represent back home. And so they they are not going to break with the president because they know that their constituents are going to be outraged, even if they do believe that he committed an impeachable offense in inciting violence or impeachable offenses. We don't see that sort of massive break in the party just yet. But, you know, the night is young. Anything could happen.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable. Sandra, calling from Herndon, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Sandra. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
I have two
questions. The first one is, with the threat of Trump's cronies saying that they're going to come and disrupt the election process and everything, at what point would they be able to bring in the military? That's the first question. And the second question is, hearing everybody pass the buck to each other, like the Capitol Police, they were waiting for somebody to okay them. Seemed like everybody was waiting for somebody to okay them to get the Capitol Police in. What is the chain of command for that? You know, who goes in first, or how is it that somebody overrides somebody else and go in if they see that it's a threat? Or, you know, I don't understand how that process works.
Bruce, do you want to try to tackle some of that?
You know, first off, they've got some 15,000 National Guards men, here are already here. So the military is here. The question there becomes, are they going to be armed or are they not going to be armed? Okay? Because these people that are threatening to come, you know, the intelligence that they're seeing on social media, if you believe the reports, it says that they're coming and they're going to be armed. So what good does it do to have National Guardsmen here if they're not armed? You're going to have every metropolitan, every D.C. police officer on duty. You're going to have National Guard from Montgomery County, you know, from Northern Virginia, Prince George's County, I should say Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. So they'll have numbers here. Which is not to say that it'll be the same kind of assault that they, that took place on the U.S. Capitol. They're threatening to hit, a number of targets, and they're claiming they're going to hit state capitals around the country. So that's going to be a problem, okay? The other thing about the chain of command is kind of interesting. This being D.C., it's different than anywhere else in the United States, of course. You've got Capitol Police. They're responsible for the Capitol. You've got D.C. Police. They're responsible for everything off of Capitol grounds unless they're authorized. They're brought in by Capitol Police, the Congress, and that sort of thing. And then you've got just dozens upon dozens of other, bona fide law enforcement agencies in Washington. So Capitol Police, they're riding point. They were the ones ultimately responsible for protecting, the elected leaders and the Capitol building. If they needed help, and there have been times where they needed help, you ask for it. You ask the Department of Justice for it. And the police chief of Capitol Police says he did issue, a call for help and reinforcements. And he says his calls went unanswered. And so that's when we get to, my question. Okay, if the president's not returning calls that he's getting from the leadership inside the Capitol when they're under siege, if the Justice Department, which has really been under the president's foot for the longest time, isn't returning calls, maybe it's higher up, that somebody has been instructed, ignore that. The president's behavior and attitude all along had been, this was not a dangerous crowd. I didn't incite this crowd. I told them to go up to the Capitol, but that's about all I did. At least that's, what the president's saying. Everybody else is disagreeing with him. I mean, it turns out the FBI had gotten intelligence and notified, if you believe their press conference today, notified their partners that there was a dangerous assault being planned on the U.S. Capitol. I heard the mayor tonight, Wolf Blitzer of CNN, put that question to the mayor. She never answered the question because I know the new police chief said in one of his press conferences earlier, closer to the attack after it happened, that they hadn't gotten any intelligence that an attack was imminent. So maybe it'll all come out in all of these investigations that they're now launching.
Thank you so much, Sandra. I appreciate your phone call. I want to drill down a little bit more on that very issue, but I need to take a break. And I want to, of course, remind our listeners that you can hear this and every discussion on The Daily Drum via podcast on WHUR.com. It's posted before 9 p.m. every night, so you can go to WHUR.com and check that out. And stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Make sure you download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters' Roundtable. My guests are Eva McKend, Washington correspondent for Spectrum News, and veteran journalist Bruce Johnson. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are certainly welcome to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Eva, I want to drill down a little bit more on this FBI press conference today. They said a lot, but I think they, at first blush, you would think that they left quite a bit out. But I think the thing that's really most glaring is that they said, and this is what Sandra was just talking about, they said, well, I told them. Somebody knew. And so, you know, they are passing the buck. Your thoughts about that press conference today and how this is all going to bear itself out?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of finger pointing, and it will all come out in the wash. Who was ultimately responsible? I think at the end of the day, we're probably going to see it's a mix of a lot of security failures. But they did say that they did give a warning that this was coming. So it's unclear how we saw such a breach. They also did announce that 20 federal criminal defendants were related to the breach were charged. So we're seeing more serious federal charges leveled at the people involved, you know, beyond just sort of trespassing. An Alabama man was charged after authorities found 11 homemade bombs, an assault rifle, and a handgun in his truck parked just two blocks from the Capitol. Another man was charged with writing text messages that he wanted to shoot House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and that he brought hundreds of rounds of ammunition and three guns to the Capitol. So I think that the also key in that announcement, yes, the finger pointing, but also that there are very serious charges emerging from this, and people are going to be held to account.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Roger, thanks for hanging on. Calling from Hyattsville, what's on your mind?
Okay, thanks. There are two things that I want your panelists to discuss or even mention. Okay, you are a Capitol Hill police officer. You have a gun. How do you watch your colleague be beaten to death with a fire extinguisher? You do nothing, and you have a gun. You watch another colleague being crushed with blood coming out of his mouth between doors. You do absolutely nothing but watch him in agony. Don't you have a gun? Why don't you use it? I can understand maybe they didn't want Wednesday to turn into another Waco, Texas type thing, but when you have guns, all of those Capitol Hill police officers, and I've been on Capitol Hill several hundred dozen times, I know they carry guns. They had two colleagues that were shot to death in 1984. Don't tell me Capitol Hill police officers do not carry guns. They do. Why didn't they use it? And I would also say that second Capitol Hill police officer who committed suicide probably witnessed some of those acts and couldn't do anything, and that just messed him up. The other thing, it's good to see the Republican Party imploding. Infighting like that, good. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, thank you so much, Roger. Bruce, I think he makes an interesting point, and let's be clear that one officer did use his gun and shot one of the rioters and killed her. But to his point, there's been a lot of discussion about why there wasn't more gun violence directed at the insurgents, because you've been around this city a while, I've been around this city a while, Eva as well. You know, as an individual, if you were to try to walk past one of the metal detectors in the Capitol without a press pass or without a police badge or something like that, you would have at least received a muscular response. So what happened?
I think, number one, there were a bunch of arenas, different arenas, okay, going on inside and outside the Capitol. So I don't think you can take one incident, you know, and really drill down on that and really come away with an understanding of everything that was taking place. Mm-hmm. I think if the officers who were injured, you know, from body blows and things being thrown at them, if they had been shot, I think the response might have been differently. And I'm not a cop. I've never been trained as a cop, so I don't want to speak for them. Here's one thing, though, that I would take to the bank. Just like the woman was shot and killed as she tried to come through the window, I'm sorry, through the glass of the door, and the elected legislators were only several feet away. She was shot and killed. I have no doubt that others would have been shot and killed had they made it through that door, okay, because then they were protecting the lives of the Congress members, as opposed to defending themselves, police officers. And I don't want to say this comes with a job, but clearly that's part of it. You know, you risk your life, you're in danger, and especially you put yourself in danger if that's going to save the life of somebody else. And so I think you saw a lot of that. There was a lot of bravery out there that day. Just look at the videotape, and you saw some of those Capitol police officers, and that's why this is such an incredible story. Capitol police officers just doing battle, trying to do their job, what they're sworn to do. Others, at least you saw one instance where it looked like one was taking a picture with a guy. You know, there reports that others were letting others into the building. Congressman Clyburn, South Carolina claims, you know, that there was complicity on the part of some of the Capitol Hill officers. He implies that, because how else would they have known to go to his office where it was and ransack his office? So, again, all of this, we would hope it's going to come out in this investigation. But, you know, Harold, one of the things I was thinking about all day long is, doesn't this remind you so much of 9/11?
It does.
Somebody was tipped off. I told somebody and nothing happened. I never thought this could happen here in the United States. You know, I thought there was protection. I thought there was security. I mean, Jesus. I mean, the U.S. Capitol, it proves to be the least protected building maybe in the city. I mean, and granted, there were tons of people. Granted, you know, some were armed. You know, they muscled their way in. But it shouldn't have happened. And that's what really disappoints me about Republicans. You know, that they're not more irate, that they're not up in arms, that they're not holding the president responsible and accountable for his words. And the president is behaving as he always does. I said it. Those are my words. But they weren't that bad. There was nothing in what I said that was that bad. He says other people have told him that. But he never names these people, because there aren't other people that have told him, you're in the right here and everybody else is in the wrong. He makes this stuff up.
Well, Eva, it appears that some members of his cabinet have had enough, although, to be quite honest, it would appear to be a tad bit disingenuous, because if Donald Trump had been, let's say, a regular president, this kind of exodus isn't unusual. So I'm just spitballing here, Eva, but from your perspective, are these lists of people who are saying, oh, I've just had enough, are they being disingenuous? Are they the rats, you know, escaping the sinking ship?
I don't know if I would characterize it like that. But, I mean, at this point, they have nothing left to lose. There's just a few days left in the administration. But I don't know if it's exactly, or it's not really an act of courage, because all along they've been complicit. You know, a key question is, this isn't the first time that President Trump has used incendiary language to rile up his base. Where were you in the previous episodes? six Republicans are now introducing a resolution to censure President Trump over trying to overturn the election and encouraging his folks to engage in this sort of lawless action at the Capitol. But, you know, were those same Republicans now moving towards a censure, which is a rebuke, but certainly not as strong as impeachment? Where were they in the weeks and months prior to the episode last week in challenging the president?
Or even, some could argue, where were they in 2017 with Charlottesville? Because that, for a lot of people, was a watershed moment in this presidency, particularly for people of color and for people in the Jewish community. And yet we really did not see the kind of issue as it relates to members of the cabinet leaving then as we are right now, Bruce. And I think that some people could argue, comparing this to Charlottesville, one that being partisan is more important than your conscience, or that looking at Charlottesville and looking at situations now, racism, loss of life, protection of the Constitution, it just doesn't matter because we have become so tribal.
You know, which Republican can you point to right now, you know, and in front of your children and say, this is who you need to aspire like? This is who you can look up to. This is somebody who will put principle before personality and personal gain and that sort of thing. I think all of the Republicans and the Republican Party at this point, and I've made a living and a career out of trying to be tough on everybody, okay? So I'm not trying to sound like a Democrat or some kind of progressive or moderate or anything. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to talk as a citizen. It's indefensible, the conduct of some of these Republicans now. And you can go back to Charlottesville if you want, but let's just go back 6 days, you know? I mean, to not come out with words, strong words condemning the actions of this president and the response to what happened at the U.S. Capitol, to continue on trying to thwart and delay the election of the people and putting, you know, president-elect and vice president-elect, you know, into office. I mean, what is wrong with you? No, I'm not going to label people, you know, as racist as some would. I think a lot of people had different agendas with Donald Trump. You know, some people want Supreme Court justices. You know, some people wanted the tax cut. Others wanted deregulation. And it goes on and on and on. You know, but whatever you wanted from the guy and whatever he gave you, it wasn't worth this price. Democracy, it's all in jeopardy right now because of what this guy has done. And God help us if we're not able to put the president-elect and vice president-elect into office without a lot of bloodshed on January 20th. And if there is bloodshed and violence in the streets, turn back to those Republicans and, like, ask them, where were you?
You said which Republican? Mitt Romney, maybe? Maybe.
Put Liz Cheney there. You know, put the handful that have come out now and said they're going to vote for impeachment for this president. And my thing, even if you don't think impeachment is the right course, that, you know, there's not much time left, you know, say something. You know, there are all kind of reporters out here now with microphones and note and pad and cell phones waiting to record your comments. They're silent. You don't hear anything from these guys. Show some leadership.
Yeah. One of the other things, Eva, that is, I would argue, equally as concerning, equally as frightening. As you know, we've had three members of Congress who have, since the incident last week, tested positive for COVID-19. And that is another issue because it looked like, and I'm sure this will We'll find out in the coming days whether or not this was indeed a super spreader event. And we are still in the midst of a pandemic, Eva. Even as we try to see more vaccines move through our population, your thoughts about where we are when we have that intersection of attack on the Capitol, super spreader event, COVID-19.
Yeah, our country is certainly going through a lot, and we cannot forget the threat of the coronavirus, which continues to be real and deadly. Congresswoman Watson Coleman of New Jersey came out with an op-ed today, you know, saying that she's 75, she had cancer, and she got COVID-19 because her Republican colleagues dismissed facts. She was sheltering in place with colleagues who were refusing to wear a mask. So here we are dealing with all of these competing crises, and this issue of mask wearing is still being, unfortunately, litigated. And she said that she had relied heavily on proxy voting for many weeks, but wanted to be here in person last week, and you know, then she gets sick. So unfortunately, this is an issue that that is also very prevalent right now as well.
Mm-hmm. With the move to curb some of the people who participated in this revolt last week, there has been discussion. There was discussion today by Minority Leader Chuck Schumer about putting some of the participants on a no-fly list. And we've already seen some moves to do that, those who have been accused of more serious violations. But there were so many people there, and the count is still not over, Bruce. Do you think that that's a good idea?
It borders on, now we're getting into the whole censure question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
First Amendment, free speech, you got to be careful here. There were a lot of people that you might disagree with who came to Washington because they support Donald Trump, and they believe, and they have the right to believe, that the election wasn't fair and square. They didn't go into the Capitol building. They didn't hurt anybody, okay? A lot of them, as they were leaving, didn't even know how dangerous it had become inside the building and that sort of thing. And somebody reminded me, and so you have to remember, even if those people come back, on the 20th, they've lost some of their rights, of course, because of the actions of others. And we're a military city right now, and that's the way it's going to look. It's going to be like somebody declared martial law. But somebody reminded me, it's kind of like, the nonviolent and peaceful, diverse demonstrations, supporting Black Lives Matter. And then nightfall comes, and then you have the riots. You have the property destruction, and reporters were making the mistake of calling those Black Lives Matter demonstrators who were peaceful, and they turned violent. And my thing to reporters was, well, how do you know they were Black Lives Matter demonstrators? Did you ask them? Did they identify themselves? Were they wearing some signage? And no, they weren't. They just assumed, and they wrote, nonviolent protest turned violent. No, it wasn't. Those were two separate demonstrations, okay? So Trump's people could argue the same thing, those that came here, and they weren't violent. So they're going to pay a price. Okay, they're going to pay a big price because of those that were violent, in those acts, 6 days ago. And what, if any, power did they have to control that situation? And so that's the dilemma here. You still got your right to protest. You've got your right to disagree. You got your right to stand alongside somebody, I guess, who's going to do some bad, some evil. But what do you do? How do you police that?
I just want to jump in here in that I agree in that this has to be really targeted. So if the FBI is pursuing this, if the federal authorities are preventing those who attack the Capitol from boarding planes on this federal no-fly list, it has to be targeted to people who did the most harm and were actually responsible. But, you know, I wonder if we would even blink if the perpetrators were of a different race, right? Muslim Americans who are even, you know, tangentially involved are quick to be put on these types of lists. So we have to also keep that in mind, that there is about putting domestic terrorists on these types of lists.
Eva, we may have an issue with your line. Bruce, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, we may have an issue with Eva's line. We're going to get that squared away. My next question was for her, but I'll ask you, Bruce, and then I'll pick it back up, because you talked about rights as it relates to some of the people who were perhaps on the outskirts, who were there just to peacefully protest and then to go home. But, and Eva talked about targeted. Well, one of the things that we have seen over the past couple of days are the social media companies just really targeting President Trump. And we're not even talking about the big ones like, you know, Facebook and, you know, and Twitter and Instagram. But it's almost laughable, you know, to me in one sense when Pinterest says we're going to, you know, shut down the president's account. I didn't even know if he had an account. What is it that he may be, you know, cooking or sewing or something, but they don't even, you know, they don't want him to be involved in any social media, essentially shutting down his most powerful instrument. And let me say, Eva, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Let me ask you, because this was originally for you, and I don't know whether or not you heard my question, but I was saying, I wanted to know what your reaction was to the fact that the social media companies had essentially just shut the president down. And as I was saying, not just Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, but, you know, Pinterest and some of the, you know, some of the more, you know, the outlying companies that you would not expect to be a consideration. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? You were talking about, you know, targeting some of these protesters and these rioters. What about what the social media companies have done?
Well, I think that they sort of see that the writing is on the wall, that President Trump is no longer going to be in power, and so that while they've tried to appease him for a really long time, they no longer feel the pressure to do so. And I think they're sort of responding to the sentiment of the country. These are private companies, and ultimately their principal concern is their bottom line. And so it seems like they're really sort of taking the temperature of the country and moving with that wind. I will say, though, the more that large platforms like Facebook and Twitter, push out these conservative fringe voices, it's not like they're going to go away. They're just going to find different platforms. And so I think we have to weigh whether not being able to see this speech at all is even more harmful, right? People say that giving them the platform to organize and to have these venues is really violent. But then on the other side of the coin, what if we can't see what's happening at all? That's also potentially very dangerous.
Interesting point. Bruce, what does all of this portend for the Biden administration and even more specifically our new vice president, Kamala Harris, who will also be sworn in next week? It just seems that all of this is fraught with so much political peril for both of them.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I think it begins with the president. This could either be a tipping point, but how many times have we said that before? You know, the election of Barack Obama should have been a tipping point. No, it wasn't. You know, and it's like my colleague says, you know, there's an ebb, you know, and a flow to these sorts of things. So what is this going to be? Here's my thing, and I think my colleague was headed in this direction, you know, before we had these technical difficulties. I had a conversation a couple of days ago with a white female colleague of mine, real sharp, a leader, you know, in this company. I think I'd have to call her a Hillary Clinton Democrat type. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the whole thing of what if this had been a black group that stormed the Capitol in this kind of way. Black people, I don't care where you talk to them, they're convinced there'd be bodies in the parking lot of the Capitol, okay? That the Capitol Hill police officers would have opened fire. It wouldn't have been hand-to-hand combat. It wouldn't have been, taking, a selfie and all this other stuff. And my thing is, okay, we all bring our experiences and our beliefs and our biases, that kind of thing. You would hope not, but there is a good chance that it would have been handled differently. Here's my thing and what I said to her. And by the way, that was her comment. My thing to her was, white people have to fix this, okay? This isn't really, it's always our problem. It's not a black problem to be fixed when it comes to race and racism and the president's rhetoric and the president's irresponsibility and that group that he riles up. White people who feel as though they're left out, nobody's looking out for us, and if they don't have it, it's because we or somebody else got it, women, gays, whatever. My point being, we all saw what happened 6 days ago, okay? And that's what I meant about Republicans. You can't look at that and try to find, a wedge in which, wow, it's not that bad. He's only got a few more days to go. And it will further divide the country if you impeach him. Are you kidding me? How much more divided can we be? What we ought to be talking about when it comes to the president and his actions and the actions of those people who stormed into the Capitol and threatened people and hurt people and caused the death of people, we ought to be talking about consequences, okay? There need to be consequences. Granted, the Republican leadership isn't talking about consequences because they're worried about some other things, okay? But the people in charge, Pelosi, the president-elect, the vice president-elect, these people need to be talking about and concentrating on consequences. A signal has to be sent here. This can't stand. This can't happen again. We went to war after 9/11. We need to go to war. I sound like a politician, don't I? We need to go to war right now against these extremists. We really do. And if you didn't think it was a problem before, now you've got your proof, okay? They happen to be majority white, majority male, some old, some not so old, some deranged. Some of these interviews, if you listen to them, they're really frightening, okay? They're hearing things perhaps that haven't been said, but they've aligned themselves with Donald Trump. And you need to make sure that this was the last stand. This will not be tolerated, and it can't happen again. And for the most part, white people are going to have to make those decisions.
Well, I think you make an excellent point, Bruce, because if you think about it, and Eva, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. There were thousands of people there last Wednesday. And as we have seen, as it relates to the arrests that have been made and resignations and firings, that in that group of thousands, is literally the fabric, interwoven fabric of America. There were police officers and blue collar workers, and there were elected officials, and there were businessmen, and there were veterans there, and there were women there as well. And there was also a smattering, I'm still trying to understand, where the black people were that we did see. And so I think that there does need to be some kind of reckoning, Eva. It's just like when your mama told you when I told you not to touch the stove. And so even though you got your hand singed, that's nothing compared to what I'm going to do when I take you out to the woodshed. And so it seems that a message, Eva, has to be sent in some way, shape, or form. It we just don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah, and certainly Democrats are making the argument that if we get another populist figure like President Trump again in our lifetime, which I don't see, I think Trump is one of a kind, but if we do, that they will be more cautious in their rhetoric and their tone and how they govern if this message of a double impeachment is sent. But I don't know if we'll ever sort of yet another President Trump 2.0. I don't see it happening in the years to come.
I think there are two tracks here. One is Donald Trump, okay? Let's call him the guy who's been telling these lies and wading in the conspiracy theories and insisting that the election was crooked. That's one thing. And that may take care of itself, okay? Impeach for a second time, and if he's found guilty, whatever. Okay, and you look at what happened in Georgia and some other things that's gone bad for him, and his businesses are going to suffer, and he's going to be facing some state prosecution, possibly. The other set of tracks that I think people really need to concentrate on, and I'm talking about the leadership, and I'm talking about Joe Biden, just to bring it back to where you were.
30 seconds, Bruce. Go ahead.
You have to listen to that population, to those white people, to those white males that were here who are not violent, but who came here to protest and petition their government and to support this guy and that crazy rhetoric. What are they really about? What are they talking about? And if it's racism and you can't fix it, you can't do anything about it. You just got to watch them. But if it's something else, they've got stuff that makes sense that you need to pay attention to, that you haven't paid attention to, you need to change your thinking on that.
Eva McKinn, Bruce Johnson, thank you both for talking to us. We'll be talking soon. That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, January 12th, 2021. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.